Okie dokie, folks. Welcome to the Roots Report podcast, presented by Motif Magazine and sponsored by Rhode Island Blood Center, Mother Earth Wellness, Graysale Brewing, Trinity Brew House, Ballet RI, and R1 Indoor Karting. I am your host, John Fusick. Today we have legendary guitarist, former member of the band Kiss, and Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductee, Ace Frehley. He has a brand new album called 10,000 Volts and will be bringing his band to the Stadium Theater in Woonsocket on March 29th.
John, it's Ace.
Hey, how are you?
Great.
So, you're out on the road with your tour. You just got back from the Monsters of Rock tour, didn't you?
Yeah, that went great.
You were out on a boat for that one, right?
Yeah.
How was
Six days.
Wow.
Well, it's my third cruise, so I knew what to expect.
I saw something in advance of that, which was kind of interesting. I'm sure you saw him over the... over the weekend was Justin Hawkins from The Darkness.
Yeah, he's a friend of mine now.
Yeah, he was dissecting your songs from the new album on a YouTube video. What do you think about that?
Yeah, man, I thought he had some nice things to say. He's, you know, he's kind of a character.
Yeah, a bit.
We both know. And when I met him for the first time on the cruise, it was funny because he had made a comment about me when he was doing an outdoor show, and my drummer didn't like it, and they grabbed him after the show and said, "You don't talk about my boss that way." So he was apologizing to Scotty, my drummer, because he's twice his size. And then he came over to me, because I was sitting in the coffee shop with Laura and a couple of my sound men and a few other roadies and Scotty. And he came over and said, "Hey, Ace, I was just fooling around." You know, I said, "Don't worry about it. I do the same fucking thing." And we shook hands and just chatted a little, and you know, now we're friends.
Oh, that's good.
But I thanked him for giving me positive reviews.
Yeah, and it was just interesting. It was just the way he was going. He was dissecting.
The way he puts it, though, you know, unless you're sharp, you know, you miss some stuff.
Yeah, I mean, he goes through it line by line. He keeps stopping, then he picks up his guitar, plays a little bit to it, kind of dissects it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was kind of interesting. So
He's funny, man.
Yeah, I mean, he did mention some things on there that were kind of interesting, some quotes that I hadn't heard and things that, I mean, it's kind of common knowledge, but I guess you have some bad blood still with the old members of your band.
You know, we're like brothers and sisters who argue and sometimes don't talk to each other for a year. But I mean, look, I've known those guys for over 40 years. And we created something, you know, that'll go down in history forever.
Oh, yeah.
In the rock and roll. We've all been inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. So they're my rock and roll brothers, you know?
I get it. Bands are tough.
Me and Gene exchanged pleasantries over the holidays. And I didn't really hear from Paul, but, you know, Paul gets weird sometimes, and then he comes around, you know. Of course, I spoke with Peter, because me and Peter, you know, have always been close.
Now, I mean, I get it. I'm in a band. I understand the whole band dynamics.
It's but, you know what the dynamic is between bands.
Yeah,
you know,
I mean, it's
and sometime... how it goes.
Sometimes you hate each other, sometimes you love each other, sometimes you're, like, playing like it's your one unit, and the other times you're, like, at each other's throats. It's just, you know, it's the band dynamic.
Totally. But, you know, in retrospect, you know, what I try to be positive, and I try to focus on the positive memories I have with Kiss, and there's a lot.
Oh, yeah. I grew up with Kiss. I mean, I saw you with Kiss like four times in the 70s. I think I even still have an Ace Frehley original Kiss guitar pick.
Yeah, look, I knew they were going to get a replacement for me because I quit.
Yeah.
They weren't going to break up the band. So, you know, it's just, I just thought it was weird that they picked Tommy Thayer. Because he was our road manager, you know, he used to get me sandwiches. did road managerial duties. And then in Australia, you know, I got really pissed at him and gave him a shot because he was trying to kick my girlfriend out of the dressing room, even though everybody had left. I didn't understand the sense behind it. You know, we have a rule that, you know, no girls in the dressing room. Well, Paul, Peter, and Gene had already left. So it was like, who gives a fuck who's in the dressing room? They're only going to see me.
Mm.
And he was just kind of trying to throw his weight around at the end of the tour, and I just fucking gave him a whack. Then me and Doc almost got into it. You know, Doc goes, "You don't hit anybody in the crew." And Doc, man, he really pissed me off. And then me and Doc almost had a fish fight. And somebody held him back. I don't know. Me and Doc are friends, so he didn't really want to have a fish fight with me, but he would have probably killed me. Because Doc's he was really stocky in those days. I know he's lost some weight over the last several years.
Unless you're involved in it, it's hard to understand, like, the whole music dynamic and the whole dynamic of people involved each other in the music business. It's really something that it doesn't work in the real world. It works in the music world, and it's hard to understand the dynamic. It's a weird thing.
If you've been in a band, you get it.
Yeah.
If you haven't, you don't.
Right, right.
Kiss fans think that, you know, we should all get together, let bygones be bygones. I'm fine with that. But, you know, unfortunately, there's other band members who I don't want to name that don't go by that motto sometimes. I mean, from what my attorney told me, Gene and Doc wanted me back in the band when they were starting the farewell tour or the the end of the road tour, and there was someone who didn't want me back in the band, you know, because he likes the spotlight, you know. He knew if I rejoined, I'd get a lot of spotlight and take some of the spotlight away from him. So, enough said.
So I saw a quote from you the other day that somebody posted. It says, if I knew I was going to influence thousands of guitar players, I would have practiced more. Did you actually say that?
I've said that quote dozens of times, and it's true. Because, you know, I'll be the first one to admit I'm a sloppy guitar player sometimes, you know.
Well, you didn't take lessons.
In the studio, I strive for perfection, but live, you know, when I'm sent, you know, I don't even consider myself a lead singer. So I'm trying to sing and fucking play the guitar at the same time, and sometimes, you know, it doesn't work.
No, I know.
I miss notes here or there because I'm trying to hit the fucking note and remember the lyric, you know.
Yeah.
It's not that easy.
No, it's not. I mean,
And you know, the most fucked up thing is a lot of times when you write a song, or when I write a song, I'll write the music first and then write the lyrics second. That's all fine, good, and dandy, but, you know, then when you try to get up and do it simultaneously, you're in for a surprise that, you know, playing the guitar part and singing it at the same time isn't always that easy, you know?
No, it's not. I tried to do a song like that last summer. I had written the lyrics for a song, and I was trying to put this different groove to it than I was used to playing, and I just couldn't get them to match up because I couldn't play it and sing it at the same time. So I just kind of shelved it for a while until I could figure out what I wanted to do.
Yeah, Steve Brown came over and he worked with me on it, and we figured out a way for me to play 10,000 volts where I didn't have to do such a complicated part. I gave that part to my other guitar player, Jeremy. You know, now it sounds decent on stage, and I had my drummer, Scott Coogan, double my vocal with me, so if I miss a word or something, it's still there. Yeah, but I mean, a lot of bands do that, you know?
Oh, no, some people.
But the one thing I won't do is have canned vocals.
we won't go to who that's referring to.
Believe it or not, it's not only him. It's dozens of other bands that do it.
Oh, I know. It's sad. It's becoming
almost. I mean, remember when Milli Vanilli?
Oh, yeah.
Their whole career was fucking trash because they found out they were lip syncing.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And, you know, today, that wouldn't have happened.
No, probably not.
So, you know, it's a double standard, and things change, and people accept things today that they wouldn't have accepted 20, 25 years ago.
So, your guitar style, I mean, you had a musical family growing up, and you basically, you just taught yourself how to play guitar, and you've never learned, so you kind of have a little bit of an unorthodox style of playing. You kind of just play your own way.
Well, I always say I never took a lesson, but in reality, I mean, the guys that taught me how to play were Jimmy Page, Eric Clapton, Jeff Beck, Pete Townsend, Keith Richards, and George Harrison, you know, the Beatles, the Stones, all those bands. You know, I mean, when I was 15, I cut school and saw the Cream opening up for Mitch Ryder and Detroit Wheels. It was their first New York appearance.
Wow.
Yeah. And I never even heard of them. Same thing with The Who. They were on the same bill. And it completely fucking blew my mind. But it also made me realize, after seeing The Who, I wanted to be in a theatrical rock group because I just thought they were amazing.
Well, I mean, that was the golden age of music. I mean,
Totally. It'll never happen again. No. There's just so many fucking bands now. I can't even keep track of them. And to be honest with you, I haven't heard anything that makes me want to keep track.
Well, exactly. I feel the same way. I mean, even back in the 70s, I mean, I remember, I mean, I liked you back in the 70s. Like I said, I went to see you like four or five times back then. And the band was kind of controversial because people were panning your music because of your stage show. And,
yeah,
you know, they weren't paying attention to the music. They were just, you know, they were giving you crap because of what you did, you know, your costumes, your makeup. They equated it all to all flash and no substance. And I never really felt that way about the band. I liked the music. I thought you had some really great stuff back then. were songs that were just great songs that you, and they're iconic songs.
The difference between Kiss and a lot of other bands is that we had the good. We could write songs, and we had four lead singers, so we could do 3-4-part harmony if it needed to be done.
Right.
So, I mean, we had the goods, you know, but on top of it, we had the show. But I used to always get aggravated when I'd look at the paper the following day after a show, and it would just talk about the pyrotechnics and the drums going up in the air and my smoking guitar and light guitar, but it wouldn't really focus on the music, you know. Right. For me, it was always the music first and the pyrotechnics second.
Yeah, well, the pyrotechnics were always just the icing on the musical cake. You know, it just gave some panache to the music. It just made it a visual show as well as an audio show. And it was just something that it was different for the time because nobody else did that too. I mean, it was very different.
We were big fans of Alice Cooper and The Who. And Alice was very theatrical, and so was The Who. Yeah, but I mean, Alice wore a little makeup. Nobody else in the band wore makeup, and you know, we just took it to the fucking max.
Well, you did. I mean, for how many years your identities were a mystery. Nobody knew who you were for like a full decade. Nobody knew who you were because it was a closely held secret. I mean, you didn't go out in public, or you weren't photographed without your makeup for, you know, if it was, your face was covered with your hand or sunglasses or something. And
yeah, that was Bill O'Coin's idea, and it worked for a while until, you know, it just became impossible.
Well, this day and age, it would never be able to happen. Somebody would get you, you know, right away because cameras are everywhere.
Yeah.
It's impossible, but
I'm really happy that there was no internet in the 70s or we'd all be in jail right now.
Yeah, a lot of shit went down back then. It's just
look, everything went, you know, and it was free love, tons of groupies, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And I'll never forget, once AIDS hit, everything fucking slowed down.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure it did.
Because now you're talking life and death.
Right, right.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering, I mean, I don't really follow Kiss anymore. I know that they had
I haven't followed them in 20 years.
I know they just wrapped their tour because I saw somebody post it on Facebook. I mean, they wrapped it in December, and it was the end of, well, their quote-unquote end of the road tour, which we'll see, because how many end of the road tours have they had, like everybody else?
Yeah, those guys never made any sense to me, and they constantly, over the years, have contradicted themselves.
Right.
You know, fast backwards, you know, 6 to 9 months prior to their Madison Square Garden show, Gene and Paul were both inviting me, Peter, and Bruce, and whoever else was alive that were involved with Kiss to come back on stage the final night. You probably remember that in interviews.
Yeah, I heard.
And then all of a sudden, you know, once the show was sold out, you know, Paul goes on the fucking Howard Stern show and says, if Ace and Peter got up, you know, you might as well call the band Piss.
Oh.
So me and him got into an argument, you know?
That's rude.
And but be that as it may, you know, at this juncture, you know, with me with a successful record and several other successful records behind it, the fuck is Paul done?
Well, we'll get on to
they put out an album in 20 years.
Right. Well, you all had that, you know, the solo stuff began in the 70s with that four solo offerings, and yours was the best selling of those four records, of those four solo albums, which was good. I mean,
but it's true.
Yeah, I mean, that was the one that people remember the most because that's, I mean, you get New York City Groove on there, that New York Groove that still gets, you know, great airplay, and I hear it in movies a lot. And
I know it gets a lot of it gets to play at Yankee Stadium every time they hit a home run.
Right. And then you have you've got like, well, I counted 14,
I just wish I wrote the fucking song.
Well, that's Russ Ballard's song, but I mean, he wrote songs for a lot of people. I mean, that,
you know what surprised me, I met him when I was younger working on 48th Street in a music store. Ricky Nelson came in with two of his band members and bought a Les Paul. And then when I looked into his career a little, I realized that he wrote, I think, almost all his material.
Oh, Ricky Nelson, yeah. I mean, certain people were songwriters, singer-songwriters, but certain people were just song stylists. And I think Frank Sinatra was just a song stylist. He never really knew.
Well, I've seen Sinatra live, and I actually shook his hand backstage. And a wonderful guy, just like one of the boys, and... But could he deliver vocally? Mm-hmm. And he just had the panache and the attitude and the charisma that most other singers just wish they had.
Well, he comes from an era of musicians and singers that had the style and such. Things change, and unfortunately we're in a time where everything is just very cold and clinical now. It's not a lot of warmth to the music and not a lot of warmth to the personalities.
Yeah, today, a lot of times today, they put bands together and they'll throw them in a fucking studio and record it with Pro Tools. And even if they can't sing, they can always use auto-tune to, you know, bring up the flat part or lower the sharp part of a vocal if it's off.
Mm.
Yeah. I've never used auto-tune on my vocals, and I don't have to because I have perfect pitch.
Yeah, I don't really care for that kind of stuff, the auto-tune and such. I've had this conversation with a lot of musicians, is that if you go flat, big deal. It just makes it real, you know? If you make a mistake,
well,
just
I'm sure I go flat or sharp in concert, but on record, I make sure I hit the notes.
Right.
Even if I have to sing it a dozen times, but I usually get it. Two or three takes.
So let's talk about this new album, the 10,000 Volts, your new album.
Faster!
I listened to it. I just got a copy of it yesterday. I gave it a run through last night. You know, there are quite a few songs I liked on there. Fighting for Life, Life of a Stranger.
A lot of people are talking about Fighting for Life, you know, and they're saying we should have put it out as a single.
I liked it. That was the first song that popped out at me. I mean, you know, after another listen, I liked Cherry Medicine. And I liked the instrumental Stratosphere. I liked the fact that you put an instrumental on there.
Well, I always do an instrumental on every studio record I've ever done.
Yeah, I liked it. It really showcases your.
It's a tradition that I started with my first 78 solo record with Fractured Mirror. It's, you know, they're fun to do.
Yeah, no, yeah. I like instrumentals. Sure. Not everybody does them because not everybody has the chops to carry one through like that. So
I was surprised John 5 did a cover of Fractured Mirror. And I listened to it, and he really didn't change it at all. He pretty much played everything note for note. You know, if I redo somebody's song, you know, I kind of put the ace stamp on it and change it a little. You know, my producer would say, you got to ace-ify it.
Now, this is something I read, is that you got that name Ace in high school because you were very popular with the ladies. Is that true?
Well, I had a lot of girlfriends, and I had one particular girlfriend in Riverdale, New York, and she had a half a dozen girlfriends. So I used to invite the guys in my band to come on dates with me, and I'd set them up with her girlfriends, and everybody would have a great time. And after a while, you know, the guys in my band just said, man, hey, you're such an ace, man, for setting me up with these hot broads. And then, you know, the name kind of fell to the wayside until I joined Kiss, and then, you know, you have two Pauls in the band, and Peter and Gene would go Paul, and me and Paul Stanley would look around. So I said, listen, this isn't going to work. Why don't you just call me my nickname, Ace?
Well, and, it
they
works.
They said, okay.
It works. It gave you an identity. That is one. I mean, all you have to do is type Ace into Google, and you come up right away. That's not bad. Three letters into Google, and you're there.
Yeah, I'm pretty amazed at the amount of stardom I have. It's like, I don't know, it's more than one in a million.
Oh, I'm not amazed at the stardom you have because, I mean, to me, I mean, this is kind of probably going to sound a little cheesy, but you're kind of, to me, Kiss was like the Beatles with makeup. You, Gene, Paul, and Peter were like the Beatles of, you know, that kind of music. And when that foursome was no longer that pure foursome, that's when that band stopped being that band for me. That was, to me, it took you four to make that sound and to make that band that band. And when you start replacing people, it just becomes a diluted version of the original. I'm not surprised that you have the stardom you do because you were part of something that was a phenomenon for so long, and you are still associated with it. You're never going to be able to get away from it. And you got into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame with it, and you've managed to build a career off of something that you started when you were in your 20s.
Yeah, when we got inducted, we missed such a great opportunity. A month before that ceremony went down, I got a call from Paul and Gene and Doc on a conference call, and they were talking about performing. And I said, yeah, I'm up for it. How are we going to swing it, you know, with Tommy there? And, yeah, everybody was coming up with different ideas, and I said, well, you know, I'm not going to do a song and play it with Tommy. You know, he's going to have to walk off the stage. And, you know, it was weird because Tommy wasn't being inducted. I was. And he was at the ceremony, you know, at the table. But the whole thing was kind of weird. You know, when I think back in retrospect, I think it was kind of like the same mindset they had when we did Unplugged. Prior to doing Unplugged, they were ready to release an album with Bruce Kulick and Eric Singer. And then we did Unplugged. The place went crazy. They demanded a reunion tour. And we did a reunion tour in the first year. grossed over $250 million. It was the highest grossing tour of the year. So I think they were afraid that me and Peter got up and played well, and I'm sure Peter could have, I know I could have done it. I do fucking hour and 20 minute shows, but you know, I'm sure Peter could have at least pulled off two or three songs, and you know, I think they missed the golden opportunity. And same thing with the last show at the Garden. I'm not calling the shots with those guys.
No, but it seems to be something there. They do a lot. It seems like they do kind of overlook you a lot or exclude you a lot, which is unfortunate.
Well, because of Tommy, they downplay me. They downplay my achievements. They downplay the fact that I wrote all the solos that Tommy's playing. For the most part, and it is what it is, you know. Yeah. They want to sweep me under the carpet, make me go away, and unfortunately, that's not going to happen.
No, because you're still out there making music, and you're making great music, and they're still out there, but they're not really putting out anything new anymore. I mean, they didn't put it on anything new for a long time, and they just wrapped it up, and they're, you know, they're living on the legend now, and you've got a new album. 72 years old, you got a brand new album out, and, you know, you're out on tour in support of it.
You know, let's go. Guys made their bed, they're gonna have to lie in it, you know. I'm gonna go down in history as, you know, I'm somebody that's very well respected by my peers. I'm always cited as being an influence for people to pick up and play guitar. That's not the case with Paul or Gene or Tommy.
It's unfortunate.
So, you know, it's like they made their bed, they got to lie in it, you know. I don't have any plans on retiring anytime soon. You know, I'm just 72, you know, but my dad lived to be 96, so I got a
few years left in me.
Just hired a new agent. He's getting me some great gigs this summer.
Yeah, well, you're going to be playing March 29th at the Stadium Theater in Woonsocket, which is a very nice theater. That holds quite a few people. And
headlining Mohegan Sun, you know, 8,000 people.
Yeah, no, it's you're
my new agent's getting me some great dates, you know. Headlining a fair. I don't have the dates in front of me, but you know, I just keep on chugging along. I got a great band, and we all get along. You know, they're all huge fans of mine, and they give me the respect that's due. And we just move forward.
So what's your show like? What are you? What can we expect to see in your show? Are we going to see, are we going to hear any old Kiss songs? Are we going to hear the new material?
You're going to hear plenty of old Kiss songs.
Do you play your smoking guitar?
You're going to hear plenty of Ace songs. What?
Do you play your smoking guitar?
Of course. But as recently, I used to always do it at the end of Shock Me. Now I'm doing it at the end of Cold June. In fact, we went out and did three shows in a row prior to the cruise, and we started off the show with Shock Me.
Oh, wow. Get right into it.
Yeah. See, I mean, it really doesn't matter where I put the smoking guitar, but that'll always be part of what I do live, and it's a trademark. Same with the light guitar that I always use in New York Groove. The rocker guitar I had to put to sleep because, you know, it's too expensive to do, to rig bombs in the truss.
Oh, yeah.
And unless you're playing arenas, it's very difficult to do, and you got to deal with fire marshals, so on and so forth. So haven't used that in a long time. And you know, if I end up playing arenas again, I'll probably bring it back.
So I'm wondering, do you own the rights to your makeup? For Kiss, can you still use it if you wanted to, or is that something?
Yes,
that
I can.
You can?
And I own the makeup, but I've licensed it to Kiss for perpetuity. So they can use it as long as they want, but they still pay me.
Oh, that's good.
So I get checks, you know, quarterly.
Well, that's a good thing.
Every time they fuck up and get caught lying, you know, they devalued the brand, which makes us sell less merch, makes Kiss sell less merchandise, less people pay, you know, come to the show. And, you know, they've made some silly decisions over the last several years. And Gene making statements like rock is dead, you know, it's not helpful. I mean, Gene, you're in a rock fucking band.
Well, my personal view of Gene Simmons is Gene Simmons cannot have enough money or have enough popularity and fame. It seems like that's something that's endemic in Gene Simmons that he just, I mean, when he tried to
or women for that matter.
When he tried to copyright that hand sign, that was just like, are you kidding me? I mean, that was just ridiculous.
What song is that?
He was trying to, like some hand sign that he did on stage, the two fingers, the rock and roll thing.
Oh, two fingers.
Yeah, he was trying to copyright that at one point.
He wasn't the first person to do that.
It just, you know, I don't know. It just seems ridiculous.
But, you know, he told me I should have copyrighted the lightning bolt strap, and he was right because, you know, other companies are making a thinner lightning bolt than I use, but they're mass producing it.
Now, you sell, on your website, you sell some straps and guitars or autographed guitars.
I sell straps, but I autograph them and I paint stars and planets on them.
And
that makes them sell.
Right, and I also saw that you're selling off some of your old KISS amplifiers as well.
I have some old amplifiers I used with KISS that has the logo spray painted on it and the barcodes, but nobody's bought them.
I saw them on your website.
I have no idea why, and, you know, whatever.
Well, so you're going to be at the Stadium Theater in Woonsocket. Do you have an opening act, do you know? Or is it just you?
I never know who's the opening act. I don't see the contracts, you know. My people take care of all that bullshit. You know, I just show up and play. Check in with the guys in my band and make sure we got the same set in mind. And we just go up and do it. I mean, you know, I've been doing this so long. It's like, you know, when I go get on stage, it's like going to the office.
Well, no, it is. It's true. People don't get that. People still, like, people have an idea about rock stars and their way of life, and they think they, like, you know, snort a line of coke, go out on the stage and do this and do that. And it's just, you know, it's a business that it's, you know, it's an art form, but it's also a business, and it has to be taken seriously. And especially these days when people are demanding so much out of a show, that's, you know, that's probably why a lot of people are turning to pre-recorded stuff, because people don't understand being in the moment and playing as you feel or changing a song. They want to hear the record as the record is, and they want to hear perfection, which is not always the way things.
You know, a lot of guitar players, young guitar players have told me, you know, they're going back and listening to the bands that I talk about that influenced me, and they're realizing that was the real shit.
Right, because they went out there and they played. They didn't play everything note for note all the time. They kind of, they improvised a bit, they jammed, they, you know, parts were put into shows that didn't necessarily happen any other time than that one night. It was, each night could be a special show, but nowadays each night is a cookie cutter of the night before.
Yeah, I remember going to live shows, and to be honest with you, when the guitar player didn't play the solo that was on the record, I was a little disappointed, you know, because you want to hear what's on the record. It's just like a lead singer changing lyrics. You know, the solo is a stamp. It's almost a song within a song. And I always strive to do the same solo that I wrote on a record.
But you're
like,
not.
I've never changed the solo in Shock Me, you know?
But you're open. You know, if you decided in the middle of a song to do the solo and then break off and continue into another bit of a solo, you'd be able to do that because that's your skill level.
Yeah.
And people would not be opposed to it. People would like that because it's just, it shows that your improvisational skills and you're thinking on your feet, and it makes it special sometimes.
Yeah, well, sometimes I do that because I forget the rest of it. So I go off on a tangent because I can't remember. And I'm not getting any younger. But where's this joint we're playing?
It's in Woonsocket, Rhode Island.
How big is it?
I think it's 1,100 seats.
Oh, that should be decent.
Yeah, no, I think if it hasn't sold out, it probably will. It's a very nice theater. I've seen a lot of bands there. It's a really nice
theater. It's an old, renovated old theater.
Yeah, it's an old movie house, but it, you know, it's got a balcony.
Those are great. They have the best acoustics.
Oh, yeah, not only that, but they have a, I mean, the venue itself is, the people who work there are great. I mean, I've dealt with them for years, and great, great staff. They treat you very well. The audience is very into the shows there.
Have you ever been in the dressing room?
Yeah, nice dressing room.
Nice dressing.
Yeah.
That's good to know.
It's a very nice venue. I like the venue.
I've been in venues, man, where the dressing rooms are just fucking shit.
Oh, yeah, I have too. Trust me, I've been in some dressing
rooms.
Even
though, you know, the stage is nice and the theater's nice, the dressing rooms are shit.
Oh, yeah. In fact, I was talking to Tom Rush, a folk singer, a couple of weeks ago, and
yeah.
I had opened for him at one point, and our dressing room was a storeroom.
Yeah, I hear you. We've all been there.
Yeah, no, I've had some interesting green rooms over the years, so... Well, somebody mentioned to me, and I'm just going to wrap up with this. Somebody mentioned this to me. I don't know if it's true or not, but back in the 70s, and I'm sure you don't remember this, and I'm only bringing it up because a friend of mine mentioned it to me. Back in the 70s, you were in Rhode Island, and you were out. Somebody saw you shopping in the hobby shop in Appanog, Rhode Island. I didn't know if you had any hobbies back then that took you out shopping for things while you were on the road.
I loved all those radio-controlled gadgets.
Oh, then it probably was you then, because you that's
I
what
had
was...
like. At one point, I had like 3 radio-controlled helicopters.
Oh, cool. Yeah, that's where you would have gotten
before
them.
It was before drones.
Yeah, I used to go to that shop to buy. I used to have little testers airplanes that I used to fly. Those were boring because all you could do was go in circles with a string. But the radio-controlled helicopters, that's where it was at back then.
Helicopters were fun. I mean, I have one in my locker I bought in Australia that was already put together. I used to enjoy putting them together. But I bought one that was already assembled for $1,500 back in 1980. I don't know what it's worth now.
It's probably worth a lot.
This fucking thing has got to be 6 feet long.
Wow.
I mean, it's probably one of those ones they use in the movies when they blow them up from a distance, you know?
Yeah, probably. Well, don't blow it up.
Nah, I'm going to keep it around. I'd like to get it up in the air sometime. I just have so much shit on my plate I'm trying to...
Well, that hobby shop is still there, so...
Yeah. I also used to like the cars, too, the fast cars.
Yeah, I had one of those, too, but it wasn't remote control. All it did was go in circles.
Yeah, well... Whatever, yeah. You could drag race with your buddy, crash into him.
Yeah. So anything else you want to add before I wrap this up? Is anything you want to say to your fans to tell them to come out to the show and what to expect and whatever?
Check out the new album, man. It's one of the best albums I've done.
Nope, it sounds great. Like I said, I did give it a listen. There are quite a few songs in there I liked, and it's called 10,000 Volts. There are videos on YouTube. I saw the video for Cherry Medicine, which is quite a cool
video.
Yeah,
that one was fun.
Yeah, it looks like it. It looks like a lot of fun. All right, well, I really appreciate you taking the time and chatting with me for so long, and I look forward to the show, and good luck on your tour.
Hey, John, I'll see you up in Rhode Island.
Take care.
All right, have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.
When you came into my life that day, you really stole my heart. And I knew right then and there, you'd always take my breath away. I never thought I'd find that special one. You're always on my mind. I knew I had to change my ways for sure, to keep you by my side. You're captivating, so fascinating. I love your cherry medicine. You heal my every need and soul. You got me cherry. feel better, gonna love you forever. You make me feel better when you're in your black leather. You make me feel better, gonna love you forever. You make me feel better when you're in your black leather. Cherry medicine, yeah, you're the one. Cherry medicine, gotta get me some. Cherry medicine, yeah, you're the one. Cherry medicine, gotta get me some.
Okie dokie, thanks to Ace Frehley for being part of this episode of the Roots Report podcast. Ace has a brand new album titled 10,000 Volts and will be bringing his band to the Stadium Theater in Woonsocket on March 29th. For more, hit the Stratosphere and get to stadiumtheater.com. The Roots Report podcast is presented by Motif Magazine and sponsored by Rhode Island Blood Center, Mother Earth Wellness, Graysale Brewing, Trinity Brewhouse, Ballet RI, and R1 Indoor Karting. Thanks for listening.